tell you is that that was standard operating procedure during my 16-year tenure.
Okay. As president, did you ever advocate a more robust compliance program?
Compliance?
Advocate for a more robust compliance program, compliance and ethics program, more robust policies with clear consequences?
No, I don't think we ever perceived we had a crisis that would have called for that. I may not understand, but I think the answer is probably no.
One of the discussions with respect to admissions, for which there's been a little bit of disagreement, has been on letters of recommendation in the undergraduate admissions, which, as you probably know, currently are not accepted. Do you have a view as to whether letters of recommendation should be introduced into the process so that persons who have personal knowledge of a particular circumstance can communicate that in light of a firewall that may be implemented?
Yeah. Well, there my views may differ from some. In a so-called holistic admissions review, I don't see anything wrong with letters of recommendation. Many universities require them, not only permit them, but require them. I regularly write letters of recommendations for people that I know for other universities around the country. So I would be quite comfortable for letters of recommendation being incorporated in a student's file, but I think that's quite different. And then the admissions people can attach whatever weight they want to attach to that. I think that's quite different from a legislator or a president or a chancellor or a trustee or whatever, you know, turning the arm on a particular case.
In terms of Category I, the first time you heard of Category I?
I think when I read about it in the newspaper in terms of this case. I would say on Category I and putting red stripes on red, white, or blue stripes on files and so forth, I believe there is a fundamental danger when you begin to routinize and systematize what is on its face a potential intrusion into the process. That not only is a potential signal that things may have gone wrong, but it is a self-perpetuating system. And that it is true that when people make inquiries, you've got to be respectful and somehow be able to keep track of things. But what I would hope is that the volume of inquiries would drop by about 90 or 95%. And that we'd be able to keep track of these by human means and get rid of any kind of sophisticated computerized tracking systems such as Category I or any kind of labeling or marking of admissions files that say this student is in preferential treatment, class AAA. You know, I think desystematizing this, the administration may have been a little bit overly efficient here and unintentionally aggravated its own problem.
Well, I think they were protecting themselves.
Maybe. I don't know.
But you wouldn't recommend letters of recommendation for administrative folks such as yourself for the file?
No, I think that's probably inappropriate, but I don't see any problem. I mean, I would feel free to write a letter of recommendation for somebody for Georgetown.
Right.
But I don't, I mean, when the president of the university writes a letter of recommendation, that's not a letter of recommendation. That's an order.
That's right.
What about a legislative code of ethics that would bar legislators from making inquiries on day-to-day management systems. Day-to-day management issues.
I'd be a little hesitant on that. I hope that the trauma that we've been through the last month will serve to, again, depress, at least for a while, the volume of legislative inquiries. But on the other hand, we're a public university, and legislators have all kinds of concerns, and that's what presidents get paid to do, is to pick up the phone and say, you know, what's on your mind, and if they've got a problem with athletics or with admissions or anything else, I think the president ought to know about it and try to be responsive to it, while at the same time upholding the integrity of the process. So, and I must say, at least in my experience, you know, Mike Madigan never, ever boxed me into a corner and said, you know, do this or else. And no other member of the legislature did either. So, but I think if you don't have a, if you're not capable of dealing with those day-to-day pressures as president or chancellor of the university, you're in the wrong line of business, because they're out there. We live in a democracy, and I don't think you're going to ever reduce them to zero.
Very quickly on the trustee issue, I know President Stuckel had suggested you've given more thought to him.
I noticed he was very laudatory in terms of my expertise on several issues.
So we want to make sure we get your views on that. Do you think that there are enough trustees, too many, too few? Do you have any views on whether the number is accurate?
Let me answer that question in terms of short-term, long-term. I would not make any changes whatsoever in the composition of the board short term, other than to replace all of its members, except Ed McMillan and any of the current members that the governor, after due process, decides he if any, that he wants to retain. Longer term, I think this presents an opportunity for the governor, the leaders, and the members of the General Assembly to. And your commission may want to comment on the longer term. Is there a better way? And I believe the basic principle is we should think again whether we could create a more diversified board that would provide a more healthy mix. At the time our board structure was put in place, the basic assumption was that the state of Illinois would be providing 50, 60, 70, 80% of our operating budget. Today, they provide about 18 or 19% of our budget. Alumni and friends are providing an increasingly large fraction of our budget, and unfortunately, students and parents are providing an increasingly large fraction of our budget. And, of course, the federal government is now almost providing as much money to the University of Illinois in terms of research grants and contracts as comes from the state. I think looking to the experience of Purdue or Indiana or Penn State that I mentioned earlier, but a more diversified board long term and probably a somewhat larger board. We have grown larger and more complex as an institution, so I would think that we might move from a board that had, for example, 9 trustees and 3 students. It might be healthy to think about moving to a board that had 12 trustees and 3 students, or 15 trustees and 3 students, but that a slightly, certainly not smaller, and perhaps marginally larger.
And do you have views on faculty involvement in the board?
My own personal views are that faculty should not, as a general rule, serve on the board unless they come into that through some other process. But they should not serve there if they're appointed by the governor or if they're elected by the Alumni Association, yes. But I don't believe that there should be a faculty seat. I know my colleagues that are sitting behind me, some of them may disagree with that view. But
why not? Why should there not be faculty?
Because the general view has been, number one, that faculty, as key as they are to the university, they're only one constituency in the university. There's staff, there are administrative professionals and so forth, and if you begin to put represent all of these various constituencies on the board, that becomes a problem. Secondly, there is arguably a conflict of interest. The faculty do shape the policies going forward to the board. All of the academic appointments that come before the board come as a result of faculty review and recommendations and so forth up through their department and so forth. So it isn't the concept of shared governance that Jim Stuckel articulated so well is very important. But I just don't think it's necessary to add another constituency at the board table, in as important as they are, faculty.
Can you give me an example where that conflict of interest would harm the university if a faculty member were on the board? Perhaps they take a leave for a year or something like that.
I guess my concept is that a member of the Board of Trustees basically represents the people of Illinois. And or a much broader constituency than the immediate employees of the university. The president of the university is not a member of the board. On some universities, the president is a member of the board, but the president of the University of Illinois, and most universities, the president himself is not a member of the board. So I don't think it is necessary for those of us who are on the inside of the university to serve also on its governing board. Does that present an unresolvable conflict of interest? No. Do some universities have faculty members on their board? Yes.
Would you do anything with the students in terms of decreasing, increasing student involvement, removing the student vote, or adding more?
I certainly would not add more, but I wouldn't have any fewer. I think student representation is just right.
Okay. Are there any other views on the trustee selection that you'd like to share with the commission?
Well, if indeed we were to look for an long-term alternative way, I think continuing the opportunity for there to be direct appointments by the governor with the concurrence of the Senate is certainly a proper process. But I would hope the governor would establish some reliable screening mechanism for any appointments that the governor would make, be that the Alumni Association or some alternative screening mechanism. I think it would provide a more healthy set of checks and balances if at least a fraction of the trustees came from a different source. Either, for example, elected by the total membership of the Alumni Association that numbers 300,000 or 400,000 people across the country, or some other source. Again, drawing on my Penn State experience, they have two representatives from industry on their board, two representatives from the agricultural sector on their board. I think they've got several representatives appointed by the governor, some elected by the alumni themselves. But I think some diversification. I'm just uneasy with the governor over the long term holding all of the chips and making all of the decisions. I think that does, frankly, it would be liberating to the board because I think even those members of the board who may or may not be close to the governor have got to be thinking constantly, what will the governor think about what I do or say?
Did you say that the Pennsylvania experience that you know of, there was a fairly widespread interest by the alumni in those elections?
Yes. Certainly we could get the details on that.
They were mail elections?
Yes, they're ballots that are mailed out, and I'm sure we could get, the commission could get, or I could provide for you their experience. My impression is, I could be wrong on this, that Purdue, and maybe Indiana also, but at least Purdue, I think, may run a similar situation. I think the staff to the commission could also check with AGB, because they could probably tell you more reliably 8 or 10 places around the country where you could go.
Thank you very much.
Nothing else? I have nothing further, Judge.
I think Princeton is all alumni association elected.
Yes, and I guess their experience.
Private institution.
Yes, their experience will also tell us that it's not problem free.
No, it's not.
President Eichenberry, you've been very, very forthcoming.
Well, thank you. Again, I thank you for your personal attention to this. I think these have been tough times. I think they can be. I think the university can expect a strong and robust recovery, however. So I think that we ought not to be pessimistic about the future. I think this is actually, as tough as it is, I think this is a bright spot, not a time for despair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Why don't we take a very short luncheon period? I see luncheon is served back there. So why don't we take a half hour and come back here at, say, 2 o'clock?
That was great.
Should have a bigger voice than alumni.
The morning session of the Admissions Review Commission, with the former President Stanley Eichenberry providing the last testimony, and before him was former University of Illinois President James Stuckel. Both of them were very frank in their discussions this morning. Stuckel at one point mentioning that he had resigned from his post because of the undue influence that he felt he was getting from the process, what he called the legislative process of governing. If I can reposition my headphone here and make sure that it's working correctly.
And Tom, this is Celeste.
Hi, Celeste.
Thought I would jump in and introduce you. We're hearing now the voice of Tom Rogers, news director here at WILL Radio. He has been covering the State of Illinois Admissions Review Commission meeting today in Urbana, and they're taking a brief lunch break. And I'm jumping in here so as to give Tom an opportunity to get settled, perhaps in a quieter place, and get his headset on straight and whatnot. So your thoughts today, Tom, on what's transpired so far?
Well, it was really kind of a testimony that I think was a little more open and frank and honest and candid than what a lot of people had expected, particularly from President Stuckel, who opened the morning with his testimony, talking about the pressures that he had faced and the change that he had noticed taking place around the year 2000 or 1999, and tracing it back to the appointment of one trustee, Gerald Shea, back in 1999, under former Governor George Ryan, and where he said that the attitude of the trustees and the policy of governing the university changed just with that one appointment to more of what he called a legislative system, where the trustees really had the power and felt that they were doing the bidding of the governor at that point. Both former presidents, made criticism of the thought that the two previous governors, Blagojevich and Ryan, considered the university nothing more than a state agency, another state agency that they had control over, that they were able to wield control over things such as maybe the admission policy.
And so the culture of the board changed in this period, beginning in the mid-'80s and then into the 1990s.
Actually, they were a little, they made it more recent than that, around 1999.
Okay.
Stan Eikenberry was the president as far back as 1979, and he mentioned under his tenure, he did not have, didn't feel the kind of pressure, except for one circumstance, didn't feel the kind of pressure from trustees or from political figures that he envisioned in years to come, in the late 90s and into the 2000s especially.
Yeah, and it seemed that James Stuckel this morning also talked about the process of how selecting the trustees fit into this.
Well, he did. The selection process changed back in the mid 90s. The trustees were elected at one point, and at that point, due to a referendum, they became a wholly appointed board. The governor now appoints all of the members of the board of trustees, except for the three students. They do as well. But all nine trustees for the last 15 years, have been appointed by governors. That began under the Edgar administration, in a move that, if I'm not mistaken, I think Governor Edgar said he kind of regretted in the end. With that change, where the governor appoints all of the trustees, and we heard earlier that the former President Stuckel had criticized one comment that... from Gerald Shea again, saying that his philosophy was that he was doing the governor's bidding, that the governor was the person in charge, especially of the university, and the trustees were there to make sure that the governor's expectations were met.
Yeah. So would it be fair to say that President Emeritus Stuckel was saying that political interests were trumping the interests of the university?
I think in some cases that may have been the case, and the admissions policies that led to this day of testimony today were one piece of evidence in that, where there was a list set up of students who were awaiting decisions on admission, and some of them had the backing of some political figures. And there's worry that that pressure was exerted on the people who had to make these admissions decisions, who were... they were answering to the president and to the administration, and then the president in turn was answering to the trustees, and that pressure was in place. No, I did notice that in both cases, former President Stuckel and former President Eikenberry had wished there were some people that were pushing back. The term pushback was used in both cases, that they had wished that that more people had taken umbrage at the decisions that were made and the pressure that was being placed on them, and President Eikenberry had mentioned that he regretted that not happening as much as what should have been in the past few years.
Yeah, the two presidents, the two former presidents that we've heard from today, did they have anything to say about where we should go from here on out?
Well, the commission, the Admissions Review Commission, seems to want to have that question answered, and they're going to be giving their report to the governor by August 8th. And a couple of the questions that came from those commission members and from counsel for the Admissions Review Commission was, how should we appoint the Board of Trustees from now on? What were your recommendations? And both presidents mentioned that, first of all, actually President Stuckel, first of all, mentioned he wanted to see in specific three trustees be taken off the board immediately. And he actually mentioned the three trustees he would want to see removed, including former president, or former trustees board chairman Larry Epley, Niranjan Shah, who is the current chairman, and Robert Vickery. They were all appointed, I believe, under Rob Blagojevich, and actually Epley may have been appointed at first under Ryan, but both Epley and Shah served as chairman under the ousted governor, former Governor Blagojevich, and he had mentioned actually them by name, and then moving on past then perhaps any personnel decisions made later on. Now, the first thing that Stanley Eikenberry said when he was on the witness stand this afternoon was he wants to see all of them removed and have Governor Pat Quinn make a decision as to whether to bring some of them back, but just to completely remove them, perhaps with the exception of the one trustee that that Governor Quinn has appointed himself earlier this year, Mr. McMillan, who Eikenberry had said may make a good nucleus for a post Blagojevich administration board of trustees.
Yeah, and McMillan was appointed by Quinn
right.
with some advice from the Alumni Association.
Right, and that's a train of thought that some of the commission members had taken earlier, and it's been discussed that perhaps one method of selecting trustees would be to have the governor have three direct appointments, but also to have lots more input from the Alumni Association. And in some cases, in both testimonies this morning, there was a discussion of should actual alumni have a vote? Should they have an election for the names of those other trustees that could be elected? Many places do that with all of the board of trustees. Stuckel had suggested, and copying some of the earlier testimony, that again the governor would have three appointees and he would appoint the other six with the okay of the Alumni Association.
Okay, very good. This is the afternoon magazine, sort of. We're preempted today by the State of Illinois Admissions Review Commission. We're carrying live coverage of their meeting today in Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn. Tom Rogers is with us this afternoon from Beckman on the campus of the University of Illinois. We're in a recess roughly till about 2 o'clock, Tom, would you say?
Roughly, that's probably about the time that they'll be coming back. They mentioned a half-hour lunch break. These things tend to take a little longer than what's been prescribed. So we would guess around 2 o'clock, current President Joseph White will take the chair in front of the six members of the Admissions Review Commission and present his testimony.
Okay. Well, what we can do, Tom, is if you'd like, we can open up the phone lines until around about 1:50, and we'll do settlement prices at that time, as usual. So, listeners, if you would like to join us this afternoon with questions or comments, what have you thought about the day's proceedings to this point in time? 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You mentioned, Tom, that there was some surprise at the candor so far today. How did that play out in the hearing room?
Well, it's hard to say from our vantage point. We were sort of in the middle of the audience, so we did notice that things got a bit animated in the audience. That some of the comments that have been mentioned, some nods and some shaking heads and that sort of thing. But again, that's what struck me in particular was that these are some of the things that they normally don't say, except. Once they're finished with their tenure, I guess, President Stuckel left in 2005. That was three years after Rob Blagojevich was elected governor. And he mentioned in specific that was one of the reasons he had left, was because of the pressure that he was feeling.
Yeah. What about expressions on the faces of the commissioners?
They were fairly even-tempered. We didn't see too much of a reaction from them. Remember that they've gone through several days of testimony like this in Chicago. This is the first time they've been down here in Urbana, and they go back on Wednesday. But they've done a lot of investigation before, and perhaps some of the shock had worn off before then. But this is a new angle. Talking about political pressure in specific rather than just the admissions process, that's been really the root of the testimony so far and what has brought out the talk about political influence in general.
Who is there in the audience?
Quite a few university employees who were right on the campus, so they came in. A couple of former university employees I recognized as well. A very large reporter contingent, probably about 30 to 40 people. They had set up an extra overflow room in the auditorium, and I don't believe that they really needed to use that. They had a couple of people in there. There's an auditorium across from the meeting room here at the Beckman Institute where they're holding the hearing. And it was full, but not totally full, not packed. And the former president sat in the front row, right behind the witness table, so to speak, where each president will be making their case.
What are the expectations when President White sits in that chair at the table?
Well, as a sitting president, you kind of wonder what kind of candor will come from President White, considering the very frank comments that were made before about political influence. It's going to be interesting to see how the current president handles the questioning from the commission. Abner Mikva, the chair of the commission, has been asking quite a few of the questions and a couple times, I guess, interrupting some of the prepared statements that started from Stuckel and Eikenberry. After that, the two attorneys that are helping the commission out, Ted Chung and Scott Ellis, have been asking questions after that.
Okay. Did either Stuckel or Eikenberry talk about this matter in terms of the future of the university, its status and standing?
A lot of them did talk about the legislative philosophy of what they felt was the legislative philosophy. That was the term that the President Stuckel gave to the thought of the trustees being the real people in charge of the university and not giving too much of the executive power to the president. Both of them did say that would have serious ramifications on the future of the university, just in the way that they felt that the president's power was being questioned by members of the Board of Trustees.
Mm. Did we hear this morning did we hear James Stuckel talk about his coming to the university and a particular governor whom I do not think was named, but was identified as the predecessor to Jim Edgar? I had half an ear to this this morning.
Was this actually when that was when Eikenberry, I believe, was installed back in 1979? That was during the James Thompson era.
Okay,
it was the Edgar administration.
That's
James Stuckel took over in 1995. I don't remember that.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, it was one of the it may have been the one incident that Stan Eikenberry had mentioned was the one time that made him uncomfortable about any undue influence of politics in the University of Illinois. But he said, by and large, during his term, he didn't feel that kind of pressure.
Okay, and also then it was Stanley Eikenberry who said, had that happened, he would have been forced to resign.
Yeah, both of them did mention that there were times when, you know, as president, as administrator, they knew that there were going to be times when they would face pressure and they would have to be ready to resign if their ethical standards weren't being met. And both said they wanted to prepare for that in advance, and I believe, if I don't have the exact quote from President Eikenberry, who had mentioned, the problem that you have to have somebody in the top leadership position that knows that he has the ability to push back, and that there will be pressure, and to prepare for that. Otherwise, they're not the right person for the job.
Hmm. This is WILL 580 AM and FM 90.9 HD2, online at will.illinois.edu. We're bringing you today Live coverage of the State of Illinois Admissions Review Commission meeting today in Urbana. The panel is in a lunch break, and we expect them back about 2 o'clock this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Tom Rogers is there at Beckman covering the commission meeting today in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. And Tom, now with me in the studio is Jeff Bossert. He's also been covering this story today, and he's got a couple of quotes from the two presidents, President Stanley Eikenberry, President Emeritus, and James Stuckel, President Emeritus, and what they had to say earlier today. So let's hear what Jim's put together for, okay. Or Jeff's put together for us.
Sure. All right. Thanks, Celeste. As a former president has said, the governor has come to assume more power over over the institution, the U of I, than the person in the position he once held. James Stuckel says that had him to step down as president in 2005. He also suggested that three trustees in the U of I board, Lawrence Epley, Niranjan Shah, and Robert Vickery, be removed. Stuckel spoke for more than 90 minutes today in the opening of the governor's admissions review commission, the first such meeting on the U of I campus. And Stuckel says the culture of the board of trustees changed during the 1980s. To something that seemed to serve more political interests than those of the university, and that starts with Shah, the current chairman.
If left on the board, it's my view that Mr. Shah's influence would not go away and that there would be resistance to the things that we want to have happen with the new board. We have to get people on the board of common mind who are willing to give up past practices.
Former President Stanley Eikenberry, meanwhile, further than those comments and testimony that just followed Mr. Stuckel in his opening statement, he suggested the composition of the culture of the board be changed.
While a few trustees, some of whom have been discussed this morning, stand out as tragic examples of the abuse of power, I think all trustees have to share some measure of responsibility for the current state of affairs in which both the board and the university find themselves.
And Eikenberry, as mentioned a few moments ago, he's supportive of legislation that would allow Governor Pat Quinn to fire all trustees, with the possible exception of Ed McMillan, who recently was appointed by Governor Quinn. Quinn would then have the authority to interview and bring back trustees at his discretion. Celeste?
Okay, thanks. That's Jeff Bossert, reporter here at AM 580.
And one of the things I wanted to mention, because there was reference made to Mr. Shah, Gerald Shah was a former chairman of the Board of Trustees and was appointed under George Ryan in 1999, not to confuse him with Niranjan Shah, who is the current board chair. And there may have been a little bit of confusion between Shah and Shah.
Their names
both
are
of which are
close.
Yes, have been at the head head position in the trustees, but President Eikenberry had mentioned that he mentioned a stark change that he thought happened back in 1999 with the ascension of Gerald Shah, appointment to the board, and then eventually became the chairman of the Board of Trustees. Yeah.
Listeners, if you'd like to join our discussion this afternoon, we've got about 8 minutes left in this portion of our break from the meeting of the State of Illinois Admissions Review Commission, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, there was some talk this morning and into the afternoon about setting up an admissions process that would be more transparent and perhaps for which there would be an appeals process. Where does that stand?
That was something that actually President Eikenberry had sort of warned against as far as an appeals process. He mentioned, yes, that admissions officers will make mistakes in their time, but there was concern about the possibility of influence being wielded in the appeals process. That was about the extent of what he had mentioned in terms of an appeals process with admissions into the U of I. Mm.
Do we expect President White to be on the stand, so to speak, for a longer period than either Stuckel and Eikenberry?
I would guess so. It's very hard to tell. Yeah. In fact, I'm surprised at the length of questioning that the two former presidents were subject to this morning, although a lot of them were their own comments, and they were not short for words in any of their any of their responses to questions or their original statements. Now, the difference now is that President White has had involvement, and is obviously the current president, and has had involvement in some of the cases that led to the Tribune story and the press reports about the admissions process, the irregularities that had happened. His name is on some of these emails, so there may be more reasons for commission members and counsel to question him directly on a lot of those individual emails, as well as his philosophies on admissions and on board and university governance in general.
And do you think there'll be more questions and more pointed questions for him about what we've come to call pushback?
There might be. That's certainly going to be something that they've picked up a theme from the two previous presidents, and that will probably be something that, that at least one commissioner will bring up.
Yeah. In the past, what did both Stuckel and Eikenberry have to say about the role of the president in admissions? If any, is there a proper role for the president?
I believe that it was President Eikenberry who said that that there should be almost as little as possible. And President Stuckel mentioned specifically during his administration the small amount of time that he says that he had spent on individual admission cases were some of the most unpleasant times that he had as president. They both had felt that the job of a university president is not to shepherd through individual admission cases or look into admissions cases. They both felt uncomfortable in doing that, and Stuckel mentioned that as one unpleasant aspect of the job before he resigned in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Once the commission wraps up today in Urbana, what lies ahead?
Well, on Wednesday they have another hearing set in Chicago. They have one lawmaker that's on the agenda currently, State Senator Chris Lawson from the Chicago suburbs, the West suburbs. Beyond that, they sort of left an asterisk after that. He's the only person scheduled for testimony on Wednesday, but they said they may have additional people testifying. Now, one big question and one question that's brought up a lot of criticism of Illinois General Assembly members, that with Senator Lawson and Mike Bolin, the other legislator who has testified so far, they are the only lawmakers who have agreed to come forward and speak. They have not heard back from Mike Madigan, the House Speaker, or from State Senator John Cullerton, the head of the Senate, or the minority leaders in either the House or Senate, or the names of many of the lawmakers whose names are on a lot of the inquiries that were made into students. There is criticism that that lawmakers are not stepping forward to testify before the commission, whether they've been asked directly or not. These are the only two lawmakers that so far have agreed.
Yeah. Well, back to that term pushback. Has the commission pushed back on that?
That's a good question. The question is how much power they have to actually. They don't have subpoena power, so they can't order people to come before the commission. I suppose the power of shame or something like that might do something, but there has been no answer so far.
Yeah. Well, they do have the power of speech, and this is a story that is receiving wide play across the state, in Chicago, here in. In Urbana-Champaign and everywhere else in the state.
Yeah, it's a question as to whether political pressure would be enough to bring some of them forward. But then again, they would be in an uncomfortable position to justify some of the things that they've said in previous emails. Whether or not they specifically asked ordered that that people be admitted, whether they even just put in their names. I mean, a lot of lawmakers had written letters of recommendation on behalf of students who were applying to the U of I. Some of them made it, some of them didn't. A good number of students that were on this category I list did not get admitted in the end, but some were, and that's the point of the discussion.
Why have Lawson and Boland agreed to step forward and come before the commission?
That's a good question. You'd have to ask them, and we'll ask. I don't believe that Senator Boland had any names on this category I list that have been found so far. That may be one reason that he knew that he wasn't going to be questioned directly about something that directly involved him.
And it seems to me that he's been outspoken from the get-go on this.
He was one of the first people that called for the firing of the trustees. So he has made his point clear, even before these hearings began, that he wanted trustees out. Now the question, there have also been calls for university administrators to resign as a result of this as well. We've not heard anything like that from the commission, obviously, and that will play out in the weeks ahead.
Yeah. When is the report due? The commission's report due?
August 8th.
Okay.
August 8th, it goes to the governor, and it's up to the governor, I guess, at that point to decide what happens after that. This was a commission that was appointed by him, so the ball would be in his court at that point.
Okay, very good. Well, Tom, we'll let you go, and hopefully you'll get a bite to eat and maybe talk with some of the folks there before they get back down to business.
I may take my lunch break just as they're finishing theirs.
Okay. Tom Rogers has been with me this afternoon, and we are covering live the meeting today in Urbana of the State of Illinois Admissions Review Commission, chaired by Abner Mikva. And this morning and into the afternoon, we heard from James Stuckel. His testimony was over this morning, and then Stanley Eikenberry was in the chair this afternoon. They're now in a lunch break. They're set to resume at 2 o'clock. So what we'll do here is we'll go with a regular feature that we hear Monday through Friday, unless it's a holiday, and that is settlement prices from the Chicago Board of Trade and settlement prices from Kansas City and also the settlement prices for the livestock contracts. Here with the numbers from Kansas City and Chicago for the grains, Todd Gleason.
Thank you so much. So let's take a look at those numbers as they settled up in Chicago on a Monday afternoon. Futures like this from the wheat pit. Nearby September contract at high today at 523 and three quarters, a low at 512. Settled at 520 and a half, up 4 1/4 cents for the afternoon. December futures of 550 and three quarters top, 39 and a quarter the low. Settlement price for December wheat at 547 and three quarters, up 4 1/4. March futures, 568 the high, the low at 559, settled 566, up 4 in July of 2010. That's next year's harvest month. 592 and a half the high, the low at 580. Settlement price for the July 2010 contract in the wheat pit from Chicago, soft red, $5.89 1/4, up 5 1/4. Hard red back in Kansas City, lead option September, 2 3/4 higher at 551 and 3/4. In Chicago, the corn pit finished in the green. September futures at 323 top, bottom at 312 and a half. Sep corn at 322 and a quarter, 6 cents higher today, and that set the tone for the rest of the pit. December futures, 334 and a half the high. Low at 323 and a quarter. Settlement price at $3.33 and three quarters, up 6 1/2 cents. The March, 347 and a half the high. The low at 337. Settled at $3.47, up 6 1/2 cents. In the May futures, 356 and a quarter the high. The low at 47 and a quarter. Settlement price at $3.56 and a quarter, up 6 1/4. July futures, 365 and a quarter the high, the low at 355. Settlement price for July corn, $3.64 and three quarters, up 6 1/4 on the afternoon. And next year's December contract from the corn, 381 and a quarter the high, low at 371 and a half. Settlement price at 380 and a quarter, up 6 1/4. September oats for the day, $1.95 unchanged. December, 207 and a half, up 1/2 cent. Soy complex now. August bean futures, $10.25 and three quarters the high, the low at $10.11 and a quarter. Settlement price at $10.21 and a quarter of a cent higher. September on out, lower for the day. September soybeans, 9.53 and three quarters the high. Low at 9.40, settled at $9.45, down 6 1/2 cents. November futures, 9.16 and a quarter the high. Low at $9 a penny and a half, settled 9.06 and a half, down 8 1/2. And November beans, 8 1/2 cents lower, 9.16 and a quarter the high, the low at 9.01 and a half, settled 9.06 and a half, down 8 1/2 cents. January futures, 9.30 the high, the low at $9.09, settlement price at 9.13 and three quarters, down 8 1/2. And the March contract, 9.26 and a quarter the high, the low at 9.13 and a quarter. Settlement price there at $9.16 and three quarters, down 8 3/4. May beans, a $9.28 1/2 cent top, bottom at 16, settled 18 and a half, down 9 cents. November beans for 2010, down 4 1/2, settled at $9.09 1/2. Bean meal August contract, 30 cents lower today, 325.80 the high, the low at 321, settled 322.90, down 30. September bean meal at 301.10 the high, the low at 296.20, settlement price at 296.60, down 310. And
The oil contract, soybean futures there, 34.15, the high, the low at 33.39. Settlement price for the soybean oil, August, 33.60, down 29. September futures, 34.27, the high, the low at 33.56, settled at 33.77, down 29. Recapping what happened on the CME Group's grain side, that's from the Chicago Board of Trade. September wheat futures were 4.25 higher at 520.5. Next year's July up 5.25 589.25. September corn settled 6 cents higher at 322.25. December at 333.75, up 6.5 cents, and that's just about where everything settled in the corn pit for the afternoon. And the soy complex, nearby August, up 0.25, but the rest of them were lower, down about 6 to 8 cents, with the September off 6.5 at $9.45, and November beans down 8.5 at $9.06. I'll return at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time, at least on the web. I'm not sure that I'll be here on WILL AM 580, but we will be on the syndicated stations as well. If you'd like to tune to one of those and pick up our programming content, you can do that. It's I have to think about it just a second. You can pick those up out of the stations in Kewaunee and Taylorville and WHOW out of Clinton. And, of course, you can pick us up, if you'd like, on the air out of Watseka, Illinois, as well. So those are some of the syndicated stations. Of course, here, I think, Celeste Quinn, we will be covering the continuations of the discussions, mm-hmm. won't we? Is that correct?
That's correct. And now on your website, WILLAG.org, will people be able to hear the closing market report there?
I skipped over that because I don't think that's the case.
Okay.
I checked to see if it was up and running, and it doesn't look like it is. And I couldn't find the piece of software that finishes that process off. So I don't think that will be the case. But, of course, they can go back and pick up the programming after the fact by about, roughly 3 o'clock. It'll be up, and they can download it and listen to it, or listen to it directly from willag.org. So it's not too hard to come back and pick up the closing market report, or any of the ag programming, for that matter, on WILL.
Very good.
Thanks,
Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Now we'll take a look at the livestock contracts. August live cattle, the high today in Chicago, 84.75, the low, 83.95, the settlement, 84.70, up 17.5. October, 90.25, the high, 89.20, the low, 90.20, the settlement, that up 45. December, 89.95, the high, 89.10, the low, 89.90, the settlement, that up 40. February, 88.97.5, the high, 88.50, the low, the settlement, 88.87.5, that up 7.5. August feeder cattle, 102.70, the high, 102.07.5, the low, the settlement, 102.40, down 15. September, 102.55, the high, 102.10, the low, 102.35, the settlement, that unchanged. October, 102.75, the high, 102.15, the low, 102.57.5, the settlement, that down 17.5. November, 102.60, the high, 102 even, the low, 102.22.5, the settlement, that down 47.5. August lean hogs, 59.55, the high, 57.90, the low, 59.17.5, the settlement, that up 12.5. October, 54.95, the high, 53.35, the low, 54.75, the settlement, that up 17.5. December, 54.55, the high, the low, 52.70, the settlement, 54.05, that down 32.5. And February lean hogs, 60.70, the high, the low, 58.65, the settlement, 60.15, that down 90. And August bellies, 63 even, the high, 60.90, the low, 62.22.5, the settlement, and that was up 92.5. The Dow is currently off 3 points at 90.90, and the NASDAQ is off 3 points at 1963. The S&P 500 is up a point at 980. Nearby crude up 33 at 68.38 a barrel. It's 1 minute before 2 o'clock. This is WILL 580 AM and FM 90.9 HD2 and HD3 Urbana. We're online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste. Quinn Henry Frayne is our technical director. We're expecting to go back at any moment to live coverage of the State of Illinois Admissions Review Commission. They are meeting today in Urbana. This morning we heard from President Emeritus James Stuckel, and then this afternoon we heard from Stanley Eikenberry, President Emeritus of the University of Illinois. Up next, the commission will hear from Joseph White, the current president of the University of Illinois. And it is seems that we'll be pushing you maybe in the direction here this afternoon of questions about why the president was trying to help out-of-state students and how much Joseph White knew about admissions irregularities. Those are some of the questions that President White is expected to face this afternoon from the commission.